Aloha, Rick Singeria, Vermont Edition. This podcast has been edited for brevity. So enjoy. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When the buds on the trees begin to show their green, it's time for the legislature to depart. And judging by the faint wisps of color on those central Vermont hills, we're nearing that moment. So any legislation that's going to make it through both chambers and arrive on the governor's desk this year need to hurry up and get finished. What's left? A lot of the Democrats' highest priority issues. Paid family leave, a tax and regulate structure for marijuana sales, $15 minimum wage. Some things are on the Senate's plate, while other things are being worked through in the House. Friday on this program, we'll get details on Senate movement from the Senate President, Tim Ash. But today, we're going to look at what's going on in the House, and we're joined now by House Speaker Mitzi Johnson. Speaker Johnson, thanks for making time for us in your busy week.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
What have you been actually working on this morning?
Oh, boy. This morning, we had a little bit of a little bit of minimum wage, a little bit of just trying to work with other parties to sort out what's up on the floor today, trying to make plans for the next steps on clean water, and just doing our usual checking in with committee chairs and making sure that everybody has what they need to keep doing their hard work and moving forward as we head into the final weeks.
In terms of the way the adrenaline feels and the actual atmosphere in the chamber and in the committee rooms, does it feel noticeably different at the start of May than it does at the start of January?
It absolutely does. And you know that feeling where you can sometime October, November, where you go, oh, it just kind of feels like it's going to snow today.
Mm-hmm.
We're just about there in that, oh, this is feeling different in this. And people are, people are just getting a little more amped up and moving towards wrapping up a bunch of significant issues. We had some good movement just this week on moving a number of bills that have been working their way through the process. Folks, bills took another big step this week, moving out of a committee or moving onto the floor, getting passed back and forth between the House and the Senate. So we are certainly getting close.
And we're going to talk about many of those, including things like minimum wage, the funding that's on your plate now for how to finance clean water infrastructure and remediation. We're going to talk about paid family leave, broadband. Now, of all of those that I just mentioned, Speaker Johnson, or ones that I haven't, if you had to pick for yourself and for your chamber one thing that you really think has just got to get to the governor's desk this year, not wait until the second half of the biennium, what is it?
Oh, boy. One thing?
Well, we're going to get to a lot of them, so,
Yeah. The one thing that absolutely has to get done is the budget. And I think the Senate is moving this week, last I heard, on the budget. And That's one where there was a tremendous amount of compromise. We had people across the political spectrum voting. It was something like 140-1 in the House. And that bill really incorporated an awful lot of our priorities. Things like really helping working families by expanding access to childcare, putting money into issues that both reduce climate change and create jobs, like weatherization and electric vehicles, dedicated money to economic development and workforce development, and really did a very good job of not only taking care of Vermonters right now, but also setting us up for a stronger future by helping to develop the economy, take care of the environment, and pay down some debts so that future Vermonters don't have to bear that cost.
You don't have much of a choice about passing the budget each year. It's sort of the primary reason in some ways that the legislature is even there. You have to pass the budget.
It's true.
So that is going to pass one way or another, and there may be some more we won't call them fights, but there could be some more conversations about what's in it. And it may come back to you again still. But,
yes.
You have to do that. Are there things, though, that you think if they don't move this year, if they don't actually pass, are detrimental to Vermonters? Or can everything else really, if it has to, wait till the second half?
You know, if I take the really, really hard line on that approach, that the budget is the really critical piece, that and issues that, you know, set property tax yields so that our schools can continue doing the good work that they do. I think we have a suite of issues that or a suite of bills before us that that I think Vermonters want from us, and so we're doing everything we can to make sure that we've got sustainable funding for clean water, that we're expanding broadband access to Vermonters is a key part of rural living and economic development in Vermont, that we're doing our job to expand our workforce and provide opportunities for Vermonters to move ahead and for businesses to get the workers they need to expand and do things that really help grow our economy and take care of working Vermonters, like, you know, like paid family leave and increasing the minimum wage. So I think there are a narrow suite of things that are really helping to move all 14 counties forward.
You mentioned broadband, and this is one of the pieces of legislation that the House has worked on and has handed over to the Senate. And there are some people who are worried about 5G in Vermont who have some concerns about broadband legislation. The idea here, though, in what you passed is to help communities that are struggling with a lack of broadband sort of not fend for themselves, although sometimes that looks a little bit like what it feels like, but to be able to gather funds and infrastructure to sort of create these this ability to have broadband within their own communities. Does that sound like a fairly good summation?
That's a terrific summation, Jane. I think that, you know, most communities would think of most communities are not in the position to even be thinking about whether or not 5G is a good thing. They just want anything other than no service. There are a lot of places in my communities where there was a series of meetings recently with government officials in Grand Isle County, and they asked me what do you think we should be looking for while we're here. And I talked about some regional specific things, but also said, look, you should also take a moment as you move through the county to just look at your cell phone, not while you're driving, please, and see how many bars you have. See if you're able to receive a call or to send an email, because that's the kind of thing that really impacts Vermonters' ability to stay connected. This is no longer a luxury. This is the rural electrification of the, 30s and 40s. And when real estate agents tell me that some houses are just more difficult to sell because there isn't service, a cell service, or they don't have access to adequate upload-download speeds, it's really leaving parts of Vermont behind in a 21st century economy.
So within the bill that you passed, what you're creating are these communication union districts, and there are some models for that, like EC Fiber. But does this mean that communities are going to have to sort of figure this out on their own if they need or want to have high quality broadband in their area? And are all communities equipped to do that?
So we've tried to create multiple paths forward. So there are some issues. There are some things for the state to move forward on, but we've also seen, as a number of governors have tried and failed to say every last mile and complete coverage, we also want to be able to take reasonable steps forward. And so this is a way of trying to give communities a different toolbox and look at where groups have been successful in Vermont and to try to create places for that to be easily replicable elsewhere. So access to funding, reduced regulation hurdles, opportunities for public-private partnerships, because we have seen that be successful. And if there are 3, then 5, then 10, then 40 other communities that can make progress, I think that would be successful.
Alan's calling in from Stowe. Hi, Alan. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Alan.
Hi. I'm curious what's happening with the forced merger delay bill. I sat in on a lot of the House Education Committee meetings, and it seems like their attitude is to just get these forced mergers over with. You know, starting from Kate Webb in the first discussion saying, I'm not sure why we're even taking this up, and Representative Conlin, when the Senate version came back, wondering if they could postpone it indefinitely. And then he ended up on the conference committee and did exactly that. I'm wondering what happens to it now.
Alan, thanks for your call. And before Speaker Johnson, before you respond, just to remind people who have not been following this as closely as Alan clearly has, this is, of course, related to Act 46, the school district merger bill. And some outstanding communities that have said we can't or don't want to comply with what the State Board of Education has been telling us we have to do in terms of district mergers. Judge Robert Mello on Monday sided with the state and dismissed all of the challenges by the Stowe and Elmore Morriston districts. But there have been separate bills in the House and the Senate, and they're kind of different depending on the chamber on providing a delay in the merger process. And so, Speaker Johnson, can you talk a little bit about whether you're going to come together on those?
Yeah. So thanks for the question, Alan. So there are bills that have passed the House and the Senate that have allowed for a one-year delay in various forms. And so the bill is currently in conference committee trying to figure out the differences between those bills. This is a unusual situation in that the legislature tries not to interfere with court cases that are happening, and so it's been a little bit difficult working in parallel with some of the some of the court cases that have worked their way through the process over this session, without trying to influence the court in any way, and there was a little bit of a twist yesterday when the Senate moved to moved to remove their 3 conferees, and so right now the House is still willing to keep working on it, keep talking about it. We put another possible proposal on the table last Friday that we were hoping would kind of break the logjam a little bit and move us forward. And at this moment, the Senate does not have conferees for that conference committee to continue, and hoping that those would be reappointed so that the conversation can continue.
In the absence of that, so then this legislation would just not move forward. So communities who were hoping for a one-year delay would essentially just not get it, right?
That's correct.
And is that what's likely to happen given where the Senate stands in this?
I'm really not sure. We still have some time left, and this is the time of year where anything can happen.
How much do you care on that particular issue? I know that's a hard position to put you in because constituents have all kinds of needs, and you want to be able to value all of them. But also, you have to have priorities, and you have limited time. And when you have a partner in the Senate committee that's not playing anymore, is there a point at which you say, this isn't going to happen. I can't fight it. I've got other things that I have to do.
This is the time of year that we do have to look to make sure that we're focused on sort of those bigger priorities of a Vermont that works for everybody. And we recognize that Act 46 for some communities has been a very difficult conversation. And we very much appreciate all the ways that Vermonters in many, many communities have come together to try to ask themselves, what is the best way for us to deliver education to our children in this changing landscape? We have significantly fewer students than 20 years ago, with all the same amount of governance units and the same amount of administration. And what are the best ways that we can share resources across these schools and create broader districts so that resources can be easily shared between communities so that kids are getting the education they need? And in places that were early adopters, there are some very good signs of success. And I was really pleased to go to my own town meetings in March and hear a presentation at the Grand Isle meeting with somebody from the Unified School District come forward and talk about how they were able to provide additional counseling services, additional language services, some additional transportation to students, and that taxpayers weren't going to be seeing a big increase. Their taxes were in fact going down by using resources better and sharing among the schools that combined. We have seen places with significant savings in other students. And remember, the main point of this bill was expanded student opportunities. We know that for a small number of districts, 30 or so out of the original 250-300 districts, there have been really difficult conversations, and it's been very, very, very hard on communities and torn them apart in some cases. And so we're trying to figure out a path forward, keeping the kids at the center of the conversation, because it really is all about trying to make sure that we're providing the best education we can for Vermont kids in the 21st century.
So we have other things to talk about, so I won't ask you more about it after this. But when you talk about these other districts that have seen success, it sounds almost a little bit like the parent who's saying to the child, look, your sister ate her vegetables and it was okay. And look at her. She's strong and growing and saving money. And these towns and districts that are in the predicament they're in now are saying, it's not the same. If we could have done it the way those districts did, we would have. So it could feel a little paternalistic or maternalistic to be saying, see, it'll be better than you think it will. Just do it. Which I know is not quite how you're saying it. But, when you look to other districts, the districts that are unable to merge and have been litigating are saying, we can't do it that way. We can't do it the way the state wants us to. And in some cases, we won't.
I think that's fair, and which is why we've been trying to find a way through to figure out how to help those communities, find success and do the best they can for their kids. And the House and Senate have each taken steps forward to say, okay, here are some of the parameters, and of the differing points between the House and the Senate, there are a bulk of them that we did come to agreement on, and we're down to a relatively small list of disagreements between the House and the Senate. And again, trying to figure out how can we reduce the amount of chaos out in Vermont communities, and how can we make sure that folks in all of those communities are really doing the best they can to provide really good educational services for their children.
Speaker Johnson, can we talk a little bit about $15 minimum wage? This is something that the House has right now. You have the Senate's bill for $15 minimum wage. So still in committee in the House. What's likely to happen over the next couple of days?
So that bill has passed out of the House General Committee and is now in the House Appropriations Committee. And I would say right now we're thinking about about the best ways to, you know, move Vermonters' ability to, you know, to move out of poverty and make a decent wage, move that forward, and do it in a way that, you know, that is paced and measured and you know, reasonable for people having to pay those wages. Of course, one of the big questions coming forward is, what does that do for the agencies providing critical services that are, you know, to vulnerable Vermonters that are paid by the state? So places like our visiting nurses and our nursing homes, the Choices for Care program, you know, designated agencies, you know, those kinds of places, adult days, that receive Medicaid and Medicare payments for their work, and just making sure that they have ways, you know, within their budget to provide a decent wage for the people who are actually providing services to take care of our grandparents or our very ill spouse, you know, or our sibling with mental illness or what have you. And so we're trying to, you know, work through those issues and find a balance there, because for the thousands and thousands of Vermonters that are trying to pay rent and raise a family on, you know, on $10.50 or $11 an hour, it's just not possible. So we're really looking for ways to, you know, make progress not only for those Vermonters really living on the edge or below it, but also things that are good for our economy that can help move people off of public assistance, create more economic self-sufficiency in their lives, and create jobs.
Something like the Medicaid workers, the workers who are paid for with Medicaid dollars, is that a fix that just requires a little bit of tweaking here, a little bit of tweaking there, an acknowledgement that the budget for these agencies is going to have to change? Or is that a sticking point that's more complicated and more difficult to actually work through?
Well, it's I think a little bit of both, because it's a problem that requires money to fix, but then we're talking about, you know, where is that money not going? And these are agencies that, you know, to be quite blunt, have been underfunded for a little while, mm-hmm. for a long while. There were struggles prior to the recession, but when state budgets really tightened around the Great Recession, any sort of, you know, increases really slowed down to those agencies. So, you know, that's now been 10, 11 years, and some of those agencies haven't gotten much in the way of increases. Last year, we were able to provide a significant increase to the designated agencies and special service agencies that provide service to to communities in Vermont, you know, home-based and community-based services for mental health and developmental disabilities. And those agencies have seen a substantial reduction in their turnover. And anybody that's ever hired people know that when you can reduce turnover, it saves a lot of money for that business or that entity, and you provide better service because you have people with more experience. So, on one hand, it's not a complicated problem, but it's not an easy problem to solve because it means coming up with that money.
You know, the other problem then, of course, is if you pass a $15 minimum wage bill that the governor is not going to sign, do you have enough votes to override a veto? And it doesn't seem like it right now.
So I think we're having those conversations to find out what people's concerns are and how we can compromise to.
But what if people's concerns are, I don't think we should have a $15 minimum wage?
I think that's you know, that's certainly one of the pieces, but that's not the biggest concern that I'm hearing. The biggest concern that we're hearing is really about a lot of these historically underfunded agencies. And so trying to find our way through on that is, I think, an issue that has been bubbling for a long time in the legislature, and this conversation of a gradual increase in minimum wage over, you know, 6 years, 5 years or so, has really helped to focus the attention on that conversation. And it's a, regardless of minimum wage, it's a structural problem that we need to address.
Another thing that the House has passed that the Senate is working on, but that, again, we already know how the governor feels, at least in theory, about the framework for it, is paid family leave. And the governor has said he does not support a mandatory approach to paid family leave. And again, there are some questions about you know, that are sort of in the mechanism, like if people have to pay into it but are not eligible to actually get paid family leave benefits, how do we deal with that? But more to the point, if the governor says no to this, again, is this something that the legislature and your chamber in the House are going to be able to stand up to the governor on?
Yeah, and you know, we had very strong support for those bills when they passed out of the House. So I feel pretty good about where we're moving. A huge difference between last year and this year in this conversation is the governor came to the table to say, yeah, I do see that it is important and necessary to provide, you know, a paid family and medical leave to Vermonters. You know, him coming forward with his own plan, you know, was a huge indication that you know, he's saying, look, we agree that it's a good thing to create policies that attract and retain young families, young people in Vermont, that it's an acknowledgement that we all have, you know, aging parents or you know, the potential for a sick spouse as we age. So to be able to provide, like seven or eight states have already done, means so that people can balance family responsibilities and their participation in the workforce is terrific, not only for Vermonters and their families, but also good for businesses.
But so if everybody's in the choir now on the need for this, but then the real sticking point is the mechanism for doing it, and the governor says it has to be voluntary, and the legislature says it has to be mandatory, that's an impasse. I mean, everybody might agree that this is a valuable program, but if you can't work together to get that passed because fundamentally you disagree on the mechanism, you know, somebody's got to give. And if it's not the supermajority in the legislature, that bill's not going to become law.
So I think there, you know, the Senate Committee on Economic Development is working on it right now, and so I think we're looking for paths forward on this, because it is a really critical piece of creating the Vermont that works for everyone. You know, one of the major things that the governor talks about is workforce, and there is a huge gender divide in why people work part-time. You know, women are nine times more likely than men to scale back their participation in the workforce because of, you know, family obligations of some kind. And so if, you know, one of the things that the governor also talks about, and he and I share this concern, is about our workforce. And we have you know, one of the charges that I gave to our Commerce and Economic Development Committee early this session was to try to create a variety of strategies to deal with different parts of that workforce problem. We have the issue of of young parents and being able to fund childcare, and whether they work so that, you know, most of their paycheck goes to childcare. For some families, that's a reality, or whether somebody stays home, which means they're not available to be part of the workforce and build the economy and support businesses in Vermont.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I'm trying to parse. But that's what I mean. Everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people are all on board with everything you're saying. But the question is, how do we make this legislation, or how do you make this legislation, you collectively, move forward? And it doesn't seem like, that mechanism is the issue right now. Is it voluntary? Is it mandatory? And you can't have both. And so that, I think, is where this hinges, right?
I think with conversations with the governor, that's where it hinges. Within the legislature, it's not as much of a problem. In the House, an overwhelming number of House members voted for some form of a mandatory program. You know, there were a number of different amendments on the table. And when you add up the number of people in the House that voted for a program where we are all in so that we could reduce the cost of the insurance program. Insurance programs are cheaper when everybody's all in. I think that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And so we're looking forward to, you know, more discussions with the Senate and the governor. I'd also point out that that the governor's plan only worked when we had the numbers of New Hampshire, and they're not moving forward with that plan either. So we don't have a lot of places to go with the governor's plan at this point.
So Speaker Johnson, it's going to be speaker's choice here. We've got 1 minute. You want to talk about clean water funding? You want to talk about the chances for tax and regulate structure for marijuana? What is the most important thing to tell Vermonters about a piece of legislation that's still on the table?
I think the water quality has been something that that has been percolating for a while, and it is something that affects so many people in the state, and it affects a huge part of the economy in the state. It's not just for the Champlain Valley; it's for the whole state. When people, it's part of our a huge economic driver, our quality of life. It's the infrastructure for so much of our drinking water. And so we're really pleased that the Senate did a really good piece of work on finding effective ways to most effectively distribute the money. And our House Policy Committee has worked on that, passed it to our House Ways and Means Committee, and so they are very close to honing in on a funding source. I think we're all in agreement that we're aiming for between $50 and $60 million of funding, most of which is already kind of finished and settled and designated. Some work that we've done in the past, some capital bills, some federal funds, some of the Escheats money, the unclaimed nickels from bottle deposits. And so we're trying to focus in on somewhere in the $6 to $10 million. I'm hoping for 8 to 10 of water quality funding to make sure that we've got clean water for generations to come in Vermont.
Yeah, it seems like the Senate got the fun job on this bill, gets to figure out how to spend the money, and the House has to figure out where it comes from. But we'll see if that can make it all the way through. House Speaker Mincy Johnson represents Grand Isle and parts of Chittenden County. She's been Speaker of the House for a couple of years now. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Jane. Pleasure to be here.